He's amused Cam Newton.
Just ask that question one more time.
He's been insulted by Charles Barkley.
When some idiot in the press asked him, if you know what you know now, would you have scheduled this game?
He's interviewed Matthew McConaughey.
I do say go Tarheel.
And he's taken on Big Blue Nation.
He's just completely taken the wind out of my sails.
It's time for The Drive with Josh Graham.
Welcome to a Thursday Drive, WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad. Where now that Jim Phillips is saying that he's going to be more aggressive and more proactive with basketball, and he doesn't want to wait until September or October to do something, you should expect it to be a compelling, dare I say, transformative summer for the ACC. And if I were Phillips, when all the coaches get together at Amelia Island in about a month or so, I would point to Miami and tell all those coaches and ADs, this is the blueprint you have to follow. This is the blueprint you should follow. See, sports is a copycat industry. Look at the NFL. The Philly special, when they ran it in the Super Bowl, everybody suddenly had that trick play in their book the following year. You go back 15 years ago, the late Tony Sperano introduced the Wildcat. Oh no, Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams, this is going to change football. Everybody then had a Wildcat package after that. When Russell Wilson fell to the third round and succeeded under 6 feet tall, teams suddenly said, we need to find our Russell Wilson. We need to find our diamond in the rough. Here's Kyler Murray, number one overall. Here's Baker Mayfield, number one overall. And the same is true in basketball. And since Miami was the face of NIL across the country, not just the ACC, and they reached the Final Four with this method, there's no longer going to be a stigma attached to it. Everyone understands it. Everybody knows this is what you need to do. You need to adapt or die. Everyone should follow their model. I'm looking at you, North Carolina. And by the way, side rant on that, Ish Masood entered the portal yesterday. Former Demon Deacon, he's about to play for his fifth different head coach in 5 years, wherever he ends up. Hubert Davis pulled the trigger. 42% three-point shooter. You need some shooting. Hit some pretty big shots. The go-ahead shot against Kentucky in Greensboro, which was a bomb from the right wing. That gave Kansas State the lead for good. And he had the three that was a dagger against Michigan State. What else are you looking for? 42% three-point shooter out on the wing. Has ties to this state. Still have the New York connection, which goes back to the 50s with North Carolina. It makes all the sense for Carolina. Try to make that happen. But this is another way the ACC should lift up Miami. It's not just NIL. Their non-conference schedule should be the template that Jim Phillips shows to other teams. How do we get left out? What's the secret to putting together a schedule that the metrics will honor? Well, when I look at the, on this piece of paper, the top 25, make it the top 20 non-conference schedules in college basketball this year, Miami ranked 17th. Which was only behind Duke in the ACC. And what did they do? In addition to the ACC Big Ten Challenge, which is scheduled for them, I think they played Rutgers. They played Maryland in a non-conference game. And they played Providence in a non-conference game. They also scheduled teams that weren't in the 300s in terms of the other mid-majors they drew. UNCG with Coach Jones over there. And UCF, which isn't a bad game either. This is how you should put together your non-conference. So that way, you don't have the real metric concerns that Wake Forest had a couple of seasons ago. And that Clemson was dealing with this past season. So the NIL piece, that's one part of it. The non-conference piece, that's another part of it. Also, with all the changes we've seen in the conference in terms of the older coaches deciding to retire, not wanting to adapt, we know the issues that Jim Boeheim had with Miami strategy. He was pretty public about that. He's gone. There goes the crotchety old man. Roy Williams didn't want to deal with it. Coach K, he's gone too. Jim Larrañaga saying, this isn't an age thing. Older coaches, I'm 73. I can adapt to today's ways. And here I am coaching in my second Final Four, which here's how crazy the amount of turnover we're seeing among coaches in the ACC is. I had to double check this stat, but it's true. Jim Larrañaga is the only current ACC head coach that has taken two teams to the Final Four. And I'm not talking, oh, the only one that's done it with two separate schools. No, I'm talking leading teams to the Final Four. He's been there twice. No other coach has been to the Final Four as a head coach twice in the ACC. Not Tony Bennett. Hubert Davis was, he's only in his second year. John Shire, just in his first year. There really is nobody else. So Jim Larrañaga, he becomes that voice if he wants to stick around and continue coaching beyond this Final Four run. The voice in the room to lean on and to represent the conference. Miami, with this run of the Final Four and last year to the Elite Eight, they have become the model program, at least for right now, in the ACC. On Twitter at WSJS Radio, Will Dalton wearing a Yankee cap today.
Now what is this?
What are you doing?
What could this mean?
I've got my Orioles t-shirt on. We'll get to baseball in just a few minutes.
We're getting to baseball now, my friend.
We're going to do this.
Because.
Please tell me we're not going to do this during today's show multiple times.
Oh, we're going to do it because you know why? It is opening day.
It is opening day.
It's opening action. You're rocking the Orioles shirt. Currently, they're leading 3-1.
Adley Rutschman had a home run.
Yeah.
Bad news for Braves fans. Max Fried.
Yeah.
Left the game early. That's not a good sign.
Yep.
For your first game.
But they are winning 4-2 against the Nats.
Yeah, they always beat the Nats.
And then the Yankees. Because I am wearing my Yankee hat. Aaron Judge, fresh off of signing his new deal. Fresh off of being named the first captain since Derek Jeter.
You could barely talk. You're so
excited. I know.
Excited.
Homered to center, his first AB of the season. And then Gleyber Torres with a two-run shot in the fourth. They lead it 3-0.
See if you can find...
against the Giants.
Okay, can we get rid of this goofy music now? Are you done?
I'm done.
Thank you.
For now.
John Sterling is back. He's like approaching his mid to late 80s as the voice of the Yankees. See if you can find that home run call for Aaron Judge. I always enjoy his over-the-top home run calls, assuming that he got it right, because he often gets his calls wrong, which is entertaining as well. We'll revisit baseball a little bit later on, plus WD watched Fight Club for the first time last night, so he'll review that later in the show. BDOT will be in studio with us in a little bit less than 20 minutes. 4 weeks from tonight, the Carolina Panthers will finally make their pick at number one in the NFL draft. Should have pulled up that Chimes music to get things fired up. I'd be fine hearing that sound every single day between now and the NFL draft, which is, again, 4 weeks from tonight when Carolina is going to be making that pick. I'm not going to stall anymore for WD here. The Panthers, we know who they're not going to take. Anthony Richardson is not going to be the pick. Today, you should consider it to be the death notice. Like the date of death signed today. Anthony Richardson not going to be the pick because he had his pro day today. And neither David Tepper nor Nicole Tepper were there to attend, and the Panthers did not take him out to dinner last night. Will Levis, he's probably out too because the Teppers didn't go to his pro day either. There apparently was a scheduling conflict, but at least they took him out to dinner. There is no Levis buzz. I haven't seen the story that says, oh, the Panthers, they might take Will Levis with the number one pick. So that's not going to happen. I have seen those rumors with Anthony Richardson. I doubt I'll see them anymore beyond today. Richardson, he's the type of player who goes number one in the NBA or Major League Baseball draft, not in the NFL draft. In Major League Baseball or the NBA, those drafts have become all about upside now. You don't expect the guy to play right away. What are you going to be in 2 or 3 years? Give me the skill sets. Give me your physical tools, and we'll try to develop those. in the minors, in the G League. That's what we're going to do. And they are not pre-packaged, pre-prepared pro prospects that are polished. A lot of P's there. A lot of alliteration. In the NFL, it's different. You expect a top 10 pick not just to contribute for you, but to be a future Hall of Famer. If you're picking in the top 10, that's what you expect these guys to be. And you expect them to give you something right away, which the only two guys I think that are capable of that right now are Young and Stroud. You can make an argument for Levis, but again, I don't think Levis is going to be the guy. So it's down to two. So who would take the swing on Anthony Richardson that's picking potentially in the top 10? The Raiders took him to dinner last night. And it seems to me, given what we know about these organizations, the Raiders and the Seahawks have Anthony Richardson written all over them. The Seahawks are at 5. The Raiders are at 7. They both have veteran quarterbacks, so there'd be no rush to bring him along. Jimmy G signing with the Raiders, Geno Smith re-upping with the Seahawks after a really good year. This was Richardson talking about his dinner with the Raiders last night.
I'm not that confident, you know. I'm just thankful for the opportunity, you know. Lord knows what's going to happen April 27th. You know, I'm just ready to get there and just living the moment. But the dinner was great, you know, talking to the guys and getting to know them and them getting to know me as a person, as a player, you know, and just trying to figure out the expectations in case they were to draft me, you know, what they expect from me as a rookie and what they're going to expect from me in the building, you know. So just trying to get familiarized with that stuff and just live on.
I don't have him falling outside of the top 10, but I don't think he will be one of the top 3 quarterbacks taken in the draft, which again is 4 weeks from now. WD, did I buy you enough time? Well worth the wait. Just inject that into my veins.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
The sixth man of Carolina basketball, BDOT, has joined us in studio. We'll put a bow on all things Tar Heel basketball for this season in about 10-15 minutes. But before we get to that, the newly improved grammar school, the newest season.
Yeah, I'm about to say, I think you're putting too much stank on it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just an added wrinkle.
That's it. It's an added wrinkle. Mm-hmm. Like past seasons, we did the locker room deal where I'd bring it up to players and then we'd use it on the show.
Didn't do much of that,
though. Yeah, he was horrible with
that. Didn't do much of that.
He was very horrible with that. He would get in there and get all stage fright.
Did like I say it right?
Yeah, like all the work is for naught if you're not going to execute it properly. Like,
caucastic question. That was a wrinkle that we added to it for one season. The new wrinkle involves sound.
Mm-hmm.
It involves music, some sort of question involving music that will be integrated into this. And speaking of sounds, BDOT had one request upon walking into the studio today, and that is the NFL draft sound being played yet again. Oh, it's one of the greatest sounds for sports fans to hear.
Agreed. It is one of the greatest sports sounds. Complete cap that I requested to hear it.
It's intoxicating. I just wanted to hear it.
Oh,
there we go.
So you,
yeah,
making stuff up.
Yeah. Big cap.
I just found an excuse to hear that again.
But I did tell him when I was on the way in, when I heard it, I was like, it does give you like, that sound is synonymous with NFL. NFL has done a great job of just marketing and just branding, and that sound is synonymous with NFL.
It's beautiful. Mwah. And I know what no cap means because of grammar school. So let's play grammar school.
Josh Graham has his own way of speaking. And just when you think it can't get any worse, rah, 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 Josh is going to attempt to learn BDOT's vernacular.
I'm
going
to put one in the air.
It's time for BDOT's Grammar School.
Nobody better than BDOT. Pre-game, during game, post-game.
Brought to you by Heritage Hardwood Floors. When it comes to flooring, they have no ceiling.
You're doggone right they don't. Heritage Hardwood Floors.
Heritage Hardwood Floors.
When it comes to flooring, they have no ceiling. If you need some floors, man, hit them up. Hit my folks up over there at Heritage Hardwood Floors. For real, man, at the crib, at the gym, at the office. You might have sidewalks out front. Might want to put you a little hardwood floor leading up to your crib. Do that. That'd be different.
I love hardwood floors.
I do.
I have great appreciation for hardwood floors mm-hmm. now that I have a new puppy. It's like, you know, I have no problem if the dog would go bathroom on a hardwood floor versus carpet.
That's fair. That's Although the puppy shouldn't be taking bathroom breaks in the house. You got to get that under control, Josh Brown.
Yeah, we've made great strides over the last week or so with Willow the dog. What's the first question that you have?
Well, I have to explain what this is first. This is grammar school. Don't step on my toes. Listen, this is grammar school. It's very, very simple. I have three words or phrases or sounds that are used in the urban demographic. And Josh has to get two out of three correct in order to get a satisfactory grade today. We haven't really shifted to a new season, but we are adding different pieces and omitting different pieces. So this is just a different wrinkle, but we'll save that for the third.
Do you want a caucastic question real quick?
Sure.
It's opening day for baseball.
That's it.
Name an active baseball player.
Oof. Oh, wait. Nope, don't you give me a race. You be quiet. Don't you do it.
I don't think I have to for that sport.
Wait, I'm almost there. Wait a second. Gosh, he's so flashy. It's my favorite. Betts. Mookie Betts.
Hey!
God almighty. I'm glad there's no time limit on this.
Major League Baseball, I think, is 8% black when 20 years ago it was close to 20%.
Yeah.
He found one of the 8% to answer that question.
Mookie, baby. Mookie Betts is the man. He be out there. His chain be swinging. That's off the chain. All right, Josh Graham. In the urban demographic, if he calls her a stallion, what does that mean? Oh, and today's segment is all about animals.
Oh.
All about animals.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If he calls her a stallion, what is he saying?
She's got a big butt.
I'll give you that.
Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah, yeah, but it's really saying that she's a thoroughbred. Like she's thick. It doesn't necessarily mean she has a big butt. It means just her entire disposition is just a thick person. She might be voluptuous. She might be, but she's built like a thoroughbred.
Is Lizzo a stallion?
To some, yep.
Understood.
Yeah, some will say Lizzo is a stallion. That big old wagon she be dragging. You know what I'm saying? Lizzo get out there and get the blowing on that flute and tooting on that toot. I love Lizzo. She just seems like just a good time, man. Just good energy.
We were talking about those Tiny Desk concerts. There are some really good ones. Like U2 had one a couple weeks ago that was fantastic. A couple times a year, one just really blows you away. NPR puts these together. Lizzo is just one of the best that have ever been done there. You can find that.
Fair. Up next, Josh, you're one for one. Good job.
Thank you.
Josh, you and other members of the white demographic could not use this phrase. But you may hear this phrase, and I can use this phrase.
But I can't say it on the radio?
You can say it. You can say it anywhere. You just wouldn't want to say it, Josh Graham.
What letter does this word start with?
An M. Okay. Why are you turning red?
An M.
Why are you turning red right now?
I don't know. When we start talking about words I can't say, I get scared.
If someone says they're about to go act a monkey...
Oh, boy.
Yeah. If someone says they're about to act a monkey, what does that mean, Josh Graham?
336-777-1600.
There it is.
Preferably somebody who isn't of the caucastic variety.
See, that's the thing.
Act a monkey.
A person of the caucastic.
Am I going to get in trouble for saying that out loud?
Possibly. You probably shouldn't. You can say what it means. You just wouldn't want to use it. Like, you wouldn't want to say, Dodge, you're about to go act a monkey, aren't you? You wouldn't want to say that. But I could say, Josh, tonight I'm going to go act a monkey. You dig what I'm saying?
I do dig.
336-777-1600.
I'm just scared. That's the number you call.
That's the number you call if you would like to help Josh Graham. 336-777-1600.
I think what it means is we're about to get turnt, or we're about to get, you know, drunk, or have like a rager of a night. That's what it means, that expression that you said.
Yeah. Josh, you can stop sweating profusely under your armpits.
I am.
That is correct.
Yay!
It's the equivalent to act the donkey. Have you heard act the donkey?
Get crunk. That's what people used to say ignite. 10 years ago.
Yeah, ignit.
That's a 2000s expression. Uh-huh. Who helped champion that? Was that Outkast? Or no, that was...
I've heard Chris Rock say that one a lot.
Yeah, that's true. Ignite. He did say that in a lot of his acts. Okay, so I'm 2 for 2.
I already have a satisfactory grade, so now we're just having fun with it.
I want to get the music one right,
This
though.
Is where we're going. Music, all right? Now, first of all, it brought me to a very interesting question when I was thinking of this. Dog rappers.
Oh.
Dog rappers. All right. So now you think of a dog rapper and dog rapper said, what must I go through to show you ish is real? And I ain't never really gave a F how people feel. I rob and I steal. Not because I want to, because I have to. And don't make me show you what the Mac do.
Ooh. Is this a 90s hip hop artist?
Yeah, it's a dog rapper. Yes. Yes. A 90s dog rapper. Oh, I just thought about another dog rapper.
Is that Snoop Doggy Dog?
Let's hit play and see.
Yeah. Oh.
Right here, dog. Where my dog's at? Be right here, dog. Where my dog's at? I'm right here, dog.
That's my second guess.
Show you is real. And I ain't really never gave up.
Robbing a stiff, cause I want to, cause I have to. It don't make me show you what the Mac do. You can cut it, WD.
Yeah, get that out of here. You know I'm sweating profusely again.
Don't why. I told him to make sure it's clean.
I even did an impression of him 30 seconds ago.
Who was that?
DMX.
You're doggone right it was DMX.
What?
What is that? Was that your DMX impersonation?
I can't do a dog bark.
You'll be hearing that again.
No!
Thanks.
See, you got to watch it.
Yes,
you got to watch
sir.
What you
Good
do.
Good job, WD. DMX. That was a DMX. But then I start thinking about who's your favorite dog rapper? Like Snoop Dogg, DMX, Bow Wow?
No, not Bow Wow.
Ooh, Bow Wow.
Nate Dogg.
Deep cut.
Nate Dogg is a good one.
Who's your favorite dog rapper?
If the question is who has the best song, like if you had to nominate one song,
nope.
Like Nate Dogg's entire like discography, I don't think would stack up with Snoop Dogg or DMX, but you know, he had some great songs.
If you had to just narrow it down to DMX and Snoop Dogg based solely on music, who's your favorite dog?
I think I'd go DMX.
Me too.
Dots here. Six Man of Tar Heel Basketball. That's been Grammar School, brought to you by
Heritage Hardwood Floors.
Voice of a generation. We're going to put the last Carolina basketball season to rest for good next on The Drive.
This is it. You ready?
All right, hold on.
All right, do it.
All right, listen up.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham.
Since we've got the sixth man of Carolina basketball, B-Dot, in studio with us, I say we talk about this Carolina basketball season. We view this like the final scene in the movie The Hangover, where they discover the camera. Mm. What do? Do we post the pictures? Do we keep them? We look at it one time, and then we get rid of the camera forever and all of the film. That's, I think, what we need to do with this Carolina basketball season. It's over, and after this segment, we move on. How do you feel about that?
I've already done that. So this is like reopening the wound for me.
But you went after Carolina fans a little bit this week, the way that they treated Caleb Love. We had Taylor Vipolis join us from Inside Carolina and the Levitard Show, and he said, talking to Caleb's dad, I don't think people appreciate just how much he received. It wasn't just on social media, also in person at the Smith Center. So you're privy to some of this, and you're close to this basketball team. When you went out publicly on your social media and said that fans should be disgusted by the way they treated one of their own, the way that you put it, what exactly are you privy to that maybe most Tar Heel fans might not appreciate about how much heat Caleb got from the fans?
I just think it's okay to voice your displeasure with the team, even voice your displeasure with players and the way they're playing or the lack thereof from game to game. But when it gets to a point where you're being disrespectful and you're tagging players, and like nobody saw that more than Caleb Love this season. And even to the point of Leaky making, I believe, last season or the season before, just talking about the anxiety and when he was in a bit of a slump and how he had to talk to Jack Emanuel to get right back on track. And these players go through that type of stuff a lot. Like, they hear everything. They see everything. Everybody sees everything. That's the thing about social media. You can ignore it as much as you want, but you see everything. And we're all human. And I think it's so unfortunate that there are so many adults who, if their child was in that same situation, they would want grace. They would want you to just understand that they're a child trying to figure it out. But when you're not, you're able to sort of remove yourself from that situation. And I like continuing to say, I said fans on purpose. Like, I don't separate the good fans and the bad fans. We're a Carolina family. We're fans. So the fans, when I talk about the fans, were disgusting. If that's not you, I'm not talking to you. But I am talking to the Carolina family. I'm talking to the fans. And all fans need to hold other fans accountable in situations like that. We're all on the same social media. We all see the same foolishness. So we should hold other fans accountable, because these are kids at the end of the day. Yes, they are kids with an exceptional talent that they can play basketball on a level that you would never, ever be able to achieve. So, yes, they do have a higher ceiling. But you have to understand, if you're upset, can you imagine how someone feels that's been doing this their entire life but just can't get it clicking? Like, and I just thought that was unfortunate. And I'm blessed and fortunate enough to have a relationship with C, to the point where I can just talk to him from time to time. And when he made his decision, I just told him that he would be missed. And I just told him that I love him and I'm going to be a fan regardless. And he just told me, he said, "Dot, like, I'm always going to be tapped in." He said, "Your energy is infectious. Keep getting the Dean Dome lit. They need that." Like, it wasn't the energy of, "Man, I'm glad I can be gone," or "just thanks, bro," or nothing. Like, he, in his heart of hearts, he still is a Carolina Tar Heel, and he's still part of the Carolina family to me.
When the "I'm Caleb Love and I'm a Tar Heel" video eventually arrives on the Smith Center boards, video boards, the reaction is what?
I think that still has yet to be determined. We really have to see what Caleb Love does next season. What if Caleb Love puts on a Duke jersey?
No, he'll...
I mean, he won't, but I'm just saying, like, we don't know what he's going to do. What if he goes to Missouri?
That makes sense.
And beats Carolina National Kansas. Championship? What if he goes to... You know, like, what... Like, you know, so I don't know what... How his story is going to be written now.
I don't know if Bill Self's going to give Caleb Love the type of freedom that he had in Chapel Hill. But Missouri...
Kentucky would.
Missouri certainly would. Kentucky.
Indiana,
yep,
would.
Certainly would. I'll tell you this. I felt it was time for both sides to part ways. I still feel that way. But listening to you, I want to defend Caleb Love a little bit here. Because what's about to happen, to your point, looking to next year, he's about to be scapegoated. When people talk about this past season, they're going to blame it on Caleb Love. Even though if I ask those Tar Heel fans, "Hey, who was the leading scorer of this year's team?" they probably would answer Armando Bacot or maybe R.J. Davis. The answer was Caleb Love. And blaming the leading scorer for all of your problems, that doesn't really seem fair. But since he is, it's kind of like how I felt Eazy-E got when the N.W.A. movie came out, Straight Outta Compton. Mm. He was the one guy who couldn't defend himself, mm-hmm. and he was dead. So is it a coincidence that all the things that went wrong with NWA were Eazy-E's fault? Probably not.
Right.
So the fact that he's not coming back, I feel like he's going to get thrown under the bus a little bit. But to be honest, I think that puts a lot of pressure on Armando. I think it puts pressure
Armando.
On RJ to perform this year. Even more pressure. Now, what excuse is going to be made now? You got to perform.
No, I agree. And that's the thing for a Caleb fan. Like, what do you want to happen this season? Do you want us to be great this season? And, well, it was Caleb that was the issue. Do you want us to suck this season? No. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's like, wow, what do you want to happen?
Maybe have both play well at the same time?
That would be ideal, Josh Graham. That
like
would
Steve
be
Smith with the Ravens? Hey, Cam Newton and the Panthers, they're making the playoffs. But when we played Steve Smith the year after they played, the Panthers released him. I was there in Baltimore that day. He had a couple of touchdowns, and he had the celebrations, and he had some words, too. And to be honest with you, as somebody who grew up a Panthers fan, Oh yeah, it was cool watching Smitty
right
get back at the Panthers.
I bet. No, again, I would like to say this too. I do not think that the Twitter and the social media is the reason that Caleb Love left Carolina.
No,
not a chance. Like that is, it wasn't that black or white.
There are basketball reasons.
Basketball reasons and all types of energy reasons with the team, I would assume, but it doesn't help. It doesn't help on any level. It doesn't help with future recruits that are saying it, like G.G. Jackson, the way the Carolina family flipped from the love for G.G. Jackson, and then when he made the decision to go to South Carolina, it was like I've had the pleasure to talk to G.G. Jackson, and that didn't make him feel good. And there are people that are play AAU basketball with G.G. Jackson that saw that same exchange.
B-Dot, since I got you here, and there is more college basketball left to be played,
is it?
How much of the Final Four are you going to be watching this weekend?
Oh, I'm watching that Final Four now.
Miami, UConn, Florida, Atlanta.
That's the national championship.
San Diego State. I agree with you. It sounds disrespectful to say that, but
it does, and I apologize.
They come from conferences that have won 7 of the last 9 national championships. They're not the power conferences that are fake power conferences right. that never win national championships like the Big Ten and the SEC. No, they're the ones that do, the Big East and the ACC. That's going to be a great game. But you know what else? Like, look in Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, they know some things, you know, out west. It's a 2-point spread for Florida Atlantic and San Diego State. So Vegas is telling you they think that's going to be a great game too.
And here's
the thing about UConn and Miami. That over-under is 149.5, and I think UConn's favored by 5 points, which tells you they're telling you 77-72. That's what they think the final score is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, sign me up for that. 77-72, 77-73? Yeah, that's a high-scoring, great basketball game. That's what Vegas is telling you they think is going to happen this week.
I agree. I mean, Miami's got that offense that goes. I have not seen UConn play one dribble this season. Even when we were in the PK tournament, they were out there with us.
Yeah.
I didn't see a play then. Like, and I see they're in the Final Four. But I'm rooting for Miami, man. ACC, let's bring it home.
And they got a former East Carolina Pirate UConn does, Tristan Newton, one of their better players. Just blowing out everybody in this tournament. Winning by 28, 23. They had a 25-point win and a 15-point win in this tournament. No close games.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
WD already knows what movie he has to watch next week. It's a Brad Pitt movie. It's baseball. Moneyball is the movie from 2011 that he will be watching. Last night, he watched Fight Club for the first time so he can scratch another movie off of his poster. We're making real headway with this segment, I feel like. So let's get into it. It's over 20 years old now. Fight Club, starring again, Brad Pitt.
Unless you're talking about Star Wars,
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Movies aren't exactly Will's thing.
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine!
But that's about to change because Josh can't stand it anymore. This is At the Movies with Will Dalton.
Okay, for those who are unfamiliar, WD hasn't seen any of the good movies. So, Fight Club is a great movie from 1999. But WD didn't like Fight Club. So he told me earlier today. So we'll ask him what he didn't like and what he did like. Then we'll get into the best quote and he'll try to guess what the Rotten Tomatoes audience score was for the movie. So let's start with what you did not like about Fight Club.
I would actually like to take back what I said earlier.
No, WD,
because
grow a pair.
I'm not.
Sometimes you can dislike a movie.
I know I can. Well, I did dislike it at first.
There it is.
But B-Dot was right when he said it's better on the second viewing. And I went back and watched kind of the latter half of the movie where things started to happen. And it was better. So.
But you didn't like it. It's okay. You don't have to be nice all the time.
I'm not trying to be nice. I'm telling you the truth.
I know. You don't like saying you dislike things.
I have no problem saying I dislike a movie. I did it earlier.
Did you?
Yes. You literally walked in and said, what'd you think? Meh.
Well, what movie did you not like that you're not willing to walk back?
I'm trying to...
We've done this for a year.
There's been movies... I mean, there's been some movies in there that I was like, meh, on. I can't remember.
Own it. You didn't like Fight Club. It's fine.
It wasn't the greatest.
What didn't you like about it?
I
feel like I'm talking to you the way that Tyler Durden talked to the narrator. You're pathetic! Just let go!
I think what it is you really have to pay attention to the movie in order to, like, pick up what's happening.
You were distracted.
Well, I mean, I was watching it while doing things, but it's just, it's a, you have to pay attention.
Do we have to create new rules that when you watch these movies, you can't have your phone out and be on Twitter? That you have to pay attention to these movies to understand?
Do we need to have that?
I think we might have to in order for you to pay attention to these movies. Sometimes this is what Ian Eagle described to be a thinking man's picture. Which means you got to pay attention.
WD, more of a thinking man.
Yes.
Anyway. It was tough on first watch. Again, this is what I'm trying to tell you.
I know, but that's the point of the segment. It's first watch.
On first watch, it was kind of tough to really like... I was like... I think what I didn't like about it on first watch was like, they're just fighting each other. Like, why is that? That doesn't get me all jazzed up. Like, it's almost like kind of stupid.
Okay.
They're fighting each other. Okay.
Right. So you didn't like fighting in the movie Fight Club.
Well, it's like, why are they getting so much enjoyment out of fighting each other? I found it kind of...
This is not a convincing argument for disliking the movie.
I'm not trying to argue any. Well, I tried to explain to you I liked it better on second analysis.
Did you like Fight Club or not? I didn't ask if you liked it better the second time. Did you like Fight Club or not?
It was
I'm
okay.
I'm very confused.
I'm just telling... No.
Thank you.
I didn't... Well, it's not black and white.
Well, then... Explain yourself.
I did. And on first watch, because it is such a mind bleep, you have, like, on second watch, I was able to pick up on things better and understand, like, oh, like, what's going on.
What did you like?
I really liked, like, the 90s, 2000s cyber-ish vibe that it gave off, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like, it kind of felt like I was watching Neo at the beginning parts of The Matrix a little bit with this character.
It is very much like that. It's of that time.
The vibe was like that.
The Matrix. This movie walked so that The Matrix could run. And this movie aspired to be the, like, rebel without a cause for an entire generation. And you could make the argument that it achieved that. Are you familiar with Rebel Without a Cause?
I'm not.
Okay. That's a movie that is old. It's from the 1950s, but it's known to be one of the greatest movies of all time. But probably not one we're going to get to and at the movies with the WD.
I also like the wrinkle at the end that I did not see coming. Like, when he was searching for Tyler, it's like, oh, wait, this was me the whole time. And like,
right.
This was all a hallucination. Like, that was done very well.
This movie is distinctive, and it's dark, it's not everybody's cup of tea, that's fine. But it is one of those movies that you will never forget upon watching it. It's one-of-a-kind characters like Tyler Durden and like Marla Singer. You're never going to forget those people, and it's a type of movie that you don't really see made so often anymore, because it takes courage to make something that can be reviled. And this movie was reviled to a great degree when it came out. It wasn't beloved. It came out right after Columbine happened, and there was an appetite for dark movies such as this that help explain why people could be so angry to fuel events like a Columbine or like you see elsewhere as well in art, from like Radiohead to what the Red Hot Chili Peppers sing about. It is of its time in 1999, but those things certainly, I think, age well and are certainly relevant today too. What's the best quote from Fight Club 99?
Like a monkey ready to be shot into space. Space monkey.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, the first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club. Second rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club.
Yeah, the whole rule scene in itself is
pretty good. The things that you own end up owning you is pretty much the quote of the movie and what it's about. Marla had a quote about grade school that I can't say on the radio that certainly I remember. I say certainly a lot during this segment and interesting a lot. I need to vary up my vocabulary. What do you think it scored in Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm going to say 86.
Got a 96.
Wow. I haven't been off like that in a long time.
Yeah. So the audience scored it a 96. The critics scored it a 79. So there was some variance on this between how the audience viewed this movie and how critics viewed it. But that's been At the Movies with the WD. I want you to be more forceful. Either you love it or you hate it.
What if I'm somewhere in the middle? What if I didn't love it or hate it? What if I'm just like, interesting?
That's bad radio.
Not if I explain why it's interesting.
Then you have to be capable of doing that.
Fair enough.
Which you have not demonstrated in terms of me understanding why you dislike this movie. I would like to understand that. Not because I love it. I don't know if I do. I don't hate it. I like this movie, though. I don't love it. It's not one of my favorites, but I like this movie. Willing to say that. But I could be convinced if there are some things that I might be missing. Since it is opening day, who better to talk to than Larry Sorensen, the former big leaguer who doubles as Stan Cotton's right-hand man on Wake football broadcast and Wake baseball broadcast for that matter as well. Larry joins us now. And Larry, before we get to Major League Baseball, we need to talk about the baseball deeks, because Tom Walter's group is currently number two in the country in the D1 baseball poll after winning 5 in a row and 9 of its last 10. And look, we knew they'd be pretty good when you got the ACC's reigning pitcher of the year back in Rhett Lauder and all, but they were preseason number 6 in the baseball preseason poll. We knew they were going to be good. But even with that being the case, with you having a front row seat for a lot of these games out at the couch, have they even exceeded your expectations?
Not really, to be honest with you, because I thought that the missing piece was defense. And I think that they've done a very nice job defensively. They've made 19 errors in the 26 games they've played, but 12 of them came in 2 games, one of them down at Myrtle Beach during spring break. So I think you throw the outliers out a little bit. The pitching has been sensational. And the hitting you knew would be there. The pitching has absolutely been sensational, even with the loss of Teddy McGraw, who was expected to be probably a first or a high second round draft pick this year. And he'll be out for the season. And then Crawford Wade, a left-hander, is out for the season. But the pitching has been great. And Tom Walter admits that's the strength of the team right now.
Tonight, Wake Forest will begin a series with the Clemson Tigers in upstate South Carolina. Getting to Major League Baseball, a lot of rule changes this offseason, and I think impactful ones. I'm wearing my Orioles t-shirt, and I probably feel better about the O's than I have in a decade, considering that you only play your division opponents 13 times now, which means it's not half the schedule against the Yankees, the Red Sox, and you know, those powers that we see in the AL East, but also the elimination of the shift that has hopefully more hard-hit ground balls getting through and becoming hits in the future, which I know you love to hear as a former pitcher. And then the other thing that's being talked about a lot is the pitch clock, 15 seconds if a runner's not on base and 20 seconds if a runner is on. and the effect we've seen in spring training. I think last year spring training games went over just a little bit over 3 hours, and then this year spring training was around 2.5 hours a game. So that seems to be positive too, at least from a television experience. When you look at it, what do you think out of those rule changes or perhaps something else is most impactful?
Well, even the fans at the game seem to enjoy it more because the pace is so much better. And let's face it, the game is better when people are in motion. When bodies are moving is when the game is fun. So if you're trying more stolen bases, which we've seen very conclusively in spring training, teams tried to steal a lot more. Home runs are still going to come, but you're seeing people in motion a lot more often. And you're right about the times. I think that that'll even out a little bit more. I think we'll probably add a few minutes to the pace of the games once the regular season starts. But I think it's been exciting for everybody and good for everybody. And I think that most of the rule changes have been very effective. What's the difference in the pitch clock to me is that players had a chance to get used to it in the minor leagues some, and almost across the board, all of the teams and all of the players have been for it. They're just gotten, it's taken a little bit to get used to it. And at this point, they've played enough games that the teams have gotten used to it.
I mentioned this earlier. Larry Sorensen's joining us on WSJS, by the way, that the World Baseball Classic was entertaining as kind of a jumping off point nationally for baseball when it ends with Shohei Ohtani facing Mike Trout to close it out, and they might be the most intriguing team. It's more fun when the Yankees and the Mets are both spending and they're both interested. I mean, that new owner in New York, the Mets, spending a ton of money. Aaron Judge, he homered at his first at bat today for the Yankees. But I'll put it to you, who is the team in baseball you're most excited to watch? Heck, the Astros are going to unveil their banner tonight facing a team that has a lot of guys we watched watch play in Winston-Salem that has a new manager, the Chicago White Sox.
I think that the Astros are probably the team to beat, but believe it or not, the team I get most excited about is watching the Detroit Tigers because I'm from Detroit. I grew up a Tiger fan. They're not going to be very good, but it's still my home team, just like you're pulling for the Orioles, who look like they have a pretty good shot at making postseason play this year. I don't think you can put the Tigers in that group. But, you know, that's the beauty of baseball, Josh, is that my team's going to lose. They're probably not going to be a 500 team, and yet I'm going to be tuning them in as soon as that game starts, and I'll be listening on the radio in my car, and that's the team when I sit at home on a Tuesday night looking for something to watch on TV. That's the game that I'll plug into.
Oh, yeah. The Orioles played the Tigers in that ALCS, which is the last time I was really happy as an Orioles fan. In fact, memory serves, now that Seattle's made the playoffs, I think Detroit might actually have the longest postseason drought. They haven't been since what, 2014?
I think it was 14, right around that time. And it's been sad, and it's been hard to watch. But Scott Harris, I think, will do a great job as their new president in charge of baseball operations. They need to get a GM, I believe, but they'll do that in short order. And they're coming. You know, wait till next year. It's hard to say that on opening day, but wait till next year still resounds. Oddly enough, this is the first time since 1968 that all the teams have played a game on opening day.
Wow.
Which is kind of a remarkable number.
That is pretty cool. Larry Sorensen, let's close with a team you know very well, the Wake Forest football program, which is going through its spring practice. You've been out there a few times. What if we got a little bit of a look at Mitch Griffiths in the early, in the opener last year while Sam Hartman was out? What have you noticed about watching him and the Deeks out at practice?
He's comfortable. He's very comfortable. The players are very comfortable with him. He's been in the program. This is his fourth year in the program. So they know him. They know what to expect. Jamal Banks had a great line. He said, I've been catching passes from him since 2020. He said, he's seen my drops. I've seen his wobbly passes. We know each other. He said, it's just going to be moving another guy in to a great system. They'll score points. And I don't think that the Wake faithful have to worry about the offense too much.
Happy opening day, Larry. Thanks for doing this.
Always a pleasure, Josh.